Hey, everyone. I have to take a moment and respond to some statements made on this show a couple weeks ago when I was not present. Now, I don't listen to this program. I've never had to listen to my own podcast. I'm not terribly sure what it's about. All of this percolated down to me through the hate messages I received from the weepy woke people, Identity Europa members, sexual offenders, and other such individuals who contact us. And that gave me the gist of what you creatures have said, and I feel that I must set the record straight. First off, allow me to settle this trivial controversy. Yes, it is wrong to have children. I've explained this many times. Imagine if I built a robot capable of feeling pain, and then I told it I'm going to unplug it in 70 minutes, and then I set it on fire. It would be wheeling around in circles, flailing its flanges, going, why, error. And now that'd be funny, and we'd all be laughing, of course, but I've still done a bad thing. Don't have children. It has nothing to do with climate change. It has nothing to do with the Jacobin articles by people who fucked up and had kids and are trying to delude you all into thinking they didn't fuck up, which we all know they did. We all think that. Evidence, we don't have kids. There you go. Primary arguments for having kids? I'm bored. I'm ready for the next stage in life. I want to watch something learn about dandelions and ethnic cleansing. I'm aging and I've given up on all my dreams, so I have to offload them onto someone else in a desperate bid for immortality. These are all maudlin, selfish reasons for bringing life into existence. You might be thinking, oh, I can program my child to feel happiness. Well, guess what, Amelie? You can devote your resources right now to those who are suffering in poverty, to organizations, as imperfect as they are, that can direct your excess income towards social justice, political change. And if your only ethical imperative is to create joy, you can do that by putting LSD in your boss's coffee. Ideally, we would forge a global agreement to no longer have children and to use the surplus resources that would otherwise be squandered on child rearing to the development of labor-saving automatons. The devices powered by these resources could drive our vehicles, conduct surgeries, have sex with us, and otherwise increase our quality of life.
And we programmed them to feel pain.
Well, of course we would. I mean, it'd be funny. To conclude my first point, no moral reason to have a kid, no ethical reason to have a kid, no logical reason to have a kid. One exception. If you're in a relationship that's on the rocks and you want to try to keep it going, maybe having a kid will do the trick. That's worth a shot. Number two, you live in a dying world. Any rational person would conclude that the situation you're in is hopeless. Should you feel joy? Obviously, it's easy for me to answer this question. I'm with the half of my colleagues who used to have a low standard of living. I grew up on a fixed income, used to take advantage of various welfare programs. The other half, you know, potty trained on Golden Thrones, went to the same fancy lad Westchester High School where the boys' room stall had AOC's phone number scrawled on the wall in Latin. That's, yeah, Will knows. He's laughing because he knows. But now I'm doing great. You know, some of my debts are paid off. I have a lot of legendary skins, and I'm experiencing ego death weekly. Yet I recognize that in the absence of systemic change, what we might even call revolutionary change, all of that is trivial and transient. The neighborhood I'm standing in will fall underwater, et cetera, et cetera. So should I feel happy about that? Answer, yes, because I'm spending the podcast money on drugs that enable me to peer behind the curtain of reality and gain insights from the spirit realm, which I then deliver to you. And by the time the IRS realizes that's not a valid business expense, we'll all be dead. As for you, the anxious and self-conscious listener of my words, I permit you to feel joy 25% of your day. A regular person sleeps about 8 hours a day, so combined with that, you're spending 50% of your time alive on Earth in bliss. That's a square deal. In closing, that should solve all your issues. It's rather cheap to get an IUD or a vasectomy, although these are, you know, not publicly funded as they ought to be. Ohio has just passed a 6-week abortion ban, which stands to be upheld by the far right wing high court majority who hold the balance of power over your body, in which case, if you're a feminist like me, you should make yourself aware of which kitchen implements can slice through bone for when society breaks down. That's all I wanted to say. You know, don't let me otherwise interrupt the Little Lord Fauntleroy Socialist Autarky Roleplay Hour. DJ, let's hear that drop.
I Okay. Formal rebuttal to one Virgil Texas. The word children comes from two Greek words. Chilios, which means cold, and dren, which is a guy with a cold saying den. Through this, we can see that a creating progeny is a cold cave. Cave is the root word for the English word comfort. So we can see that it's a cold comfort. To have a kid is to imbue them with the name of whatever fandom you have. You want to name your kid Lannister? Go ahead. You want to name your kid Deep Space Nine? You want to name your kid Porgo?
I do.
You want to name your kid The Matrix? Do you want to make your kid dress up in an Assassin's Creed outfit every day? You can do it. But the most important part about having a kid, especially if you're a politically active adult, like everyone who listens to this show, who, you know, most of whom not in danger of having kids, not because they're not sexually active, but because they simply they stick condoms down their urethras. They don't know how to put them on. They've never successfully applied them. They just stick them down their urethras. They eat female condoms because that's how they think it works, because they're trying to be male feminist. They just swallow them whole. This is one of the lowest IQ listenerships of any show. But to have a kid is to have a device you can use to win an argument. Are you arguing with someone about some just fucking indecipherable, like, internal drama in whatever left organization you're in? Hey, be like, I have a kid and I don't want to raise him in a world where, you know, bylaw 562 exists. Well, that person that you're arguing with is going to be afraid that you're going to kill your kid if they pass that bylaw. Boom. Problem solved. Having an argument about fandom? Oh, who do you think knows more about X-Men Days of the Past in front of us? Do you think it's just the dumbass, or do you think it's the guy who named his daughter Dark Phoenix Neo? So not only is it all right to have kids, it's the most moral thing you can do. Don't drop that beat. Let's hear some Mozart for a change.
This has been Firing Line.
I don't know what I believe anymore, but there's much to think about.
That's for sure. Will, in Assassin's Creed, you sit in a special chair and you access the memories that are left in your dad's cum by putting on a robe and jumping into hay. Do you think the game of Assassin's Creed would be possible if people didn't have kids? No.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do. Should I have a child?
You should probably have like three, because what if one dies?
That's a good point. And, then, the other one's
one of them. Just like I'm doing the math here. One of them is going to be like deeply affected by their sibling dying. So that basically a wasted kid as well. You got two wasted kids. One of them is going to be pretty resilient. That's why the Bushes had like seven kids, despite being rich.
Put one of them on a jar.
You know what's even more fun to dress up as your favorite fandom? Little kitty cat.
All right. Imagine a little kitty cat
dressed up like SJW Star Wars.
That's true. It's pretty good. It's pretty good when a cat puts on like Boba Fett's hat. I like that a lot. It's pretty fun. It's like, hey, little guy, I hope there's no catnip in space.
Well, regardless of where you come down on this issue, I think we can all agree on one thing, is that you should make pretty much all major life decisions based on what we tell you to do.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No question.
Now here's my bit. Hello, je m'appelle Guillaume. I'm a lazy French construction worker. Sacrebleu, sorry, mon ami. I lift my lit Gaulois cigarette in a bucket of oily rags while I took my 3-hour lunch in the mistress break from work at Notre Dame Cathedral. And my bad, mon ami. Did you guys see by far the best joke about Notre Dame burning down was Brace's joke, where he said Macron was told that a 607-year-old woman was getting hot and he dropped everything and ran to
This I gotta see.
I don't wanna join this like making fun of French people after their historic monument burned down, or the, you know, bodies adjacent space that was bad and deserved to burn down. I don't know which opinion I have yet. Do you think it's funny? Do you think it's funny that the French safety inspector who inspects all the buildings in France was distraught over a particularly emotional Mr. Bean skit he saw? Couldn't inspect any buildings. Is that shit funny to you, dude?
Yes, it is.
You guys, that's not even
what the fuck
what,
is wrong
that's
with
not even what happened. That's not what did it. And some people say, oh, it was definitely Muslims. It was not. It was a prank by a bunch of USC frat boys.
You really think it's funny? You really think it's funny that this horrible tragedy happened because all the safety inspectors were on strike because Macron tried to raise the work week to 17 minutes?
We make fun of French people all the time, and they deserve it. But it is cool how they're like, Macron will be like, what if we have a law that says you can no longer kill your boss? They just fucking go
fuck
crazy.
You. And then they just start going out punching cops in the face.
It is cool, but like, you know, they're really good at setting cars on fire too. So yeah, cathedrals, you know, shouldn't be too big of a leap from there.
Yeah, it is cool, but look at what they squander all that labor power on.
What, being smoking cigarettes?
Yeah, being racist.
Driving around in a bicycle with a baguette in their bag?
Demanding an increase to the earned income mistress allowance.
French people, they have like an earned superiority complex by, you know, how relatively big dick their labor population is compared to, you know, anywhere else. But they lose it because they'll watch like Dumb and Dumberer and just start weeping at how brilliant it is.
Yeah, no, so they have universal they have universal basic ortolan.
Yeah. Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about Notre Dame burning down, but first I want to introduce our guest who's sitting in the trap this week. It's Nick Hayes from Means TV. He's the wonder kid behind the brand new socialist streaming platform that you may have heard about. Nick, what's up?
What's happening? Thanks for having me.
That's what's up.
He's like a mad mixture of Sergei Eisenstein and Brandon Tartikoff.
Well, I don't know about that.
Brandon Wardell?
Probably that too.
So I feel, again, a little bit responsible for the burning of one of the world's most historic heritage sites.
Yeah, what the fuck, dude?
I feel like we willed it into being by doing that episode about Ben Shapiro's shitty book about the death of Western civilization. And not too far, not too earlier than that, doing an episode on Glenn Beck, who certainly covered himself in glory following this fire. God. By like, you know, Shapiro, of course, the death of the West Brigade people are just like, the burning of Notre Dame is what's been happening every day. Like, people not going to church is really what burned Notre Dame
this
down.
This is just symbolic of the West abandoning its heritage.
And then Glenn Beck took it a step further, literally saying on TV, if it was arson, we'll never know.
Yep. Because it's just like, the PC sickos of France are going to cover for the Islamists because they don't want white people to wake up to what's happening because they're part of the Soros cabal. I mean, it's amazing. And it's perfectly self-contained because in their minds now, it was definitely arson because there's no evidence of it. The fact that there isn't evidence of it proves that it was because it means there it's being covered up.
Done and done. But I just think they're being the wrong kind of racist, because as soon as I saw flames leaping out from the scaffoldings of the Notre Dame renovation, I was just like, well, this is obviously lazy, incompetent French workmen smoking cigarettes. And yeah.
Have you seen any of the Facebook posts of people being like, wow, the sanctuary is still standing, like faith, you know, that kind of thing? Like,
well, the brick part didn't burn? Right. Wow.
Well, amazing. I mean, Nick, that's interesting because, like, I was thinking the other day, like, all the, like, the death of the West people who are, won't admit it publicly because they're too busy, like, you know, crying and lamenting on the timeline, but, like, deep down inside, they're really glad this happened. They love nothing more than to wallow in this kind of shit and, you know, pretend that it was like, you know, Muslims who, you know, burned down there.
Because even if it wasn't, people start thinking about what if it was.
Yeah, what if it was?
Yeah.
And how would that make me feel?
Yeah, exactly. It would make me feel exactly like I'm feeling now all the time. But now I have like a physical image to look at.
Yep.
But the thing is, like, there's something so essentially like faithless about that. And like, you know, I'm not a religious person, But if I was, it would be so easy, like after this massive fire, like swept through the entire cathedral, to just be like, oh, wait, look, the stained glass window's still there. The crucifix is still there. That seems like God saved it to me, like, you know?
Have you seen the memes of, like, Jesus running into the fire? Like, grabbing shit and saving it?
They're like the weebs who don't know anything about Japan, but for Catholicism, they're like, oh my God, Muslims came in there and burned down the Christ machine. The Christ machine's broken now. Do you realize how important that is to us Catholics?
It's like Santa's sleigh.
Do you realize that Muslims poured halal sauce all over St. Peter's sword, I think? St. Peter's street katana. The unboxing of the seven sacraments.
The rare crown of thorns unboxing. It appears to be some leaves braided together in a glass tube of some kind.
We are here doing, this is another of our famous unboxing videos. This will be the unboxing video of the Ark of the Covenant. Oh no.
And then, like, of course, the other thing is, let's go around the circle. I've been to Notre Dame, visited it, inside in it, saw it before the fire
did
damage.
It win, we win.
That Matt and I have seen it.
Yeah,
original.
We win.
I have not seen it.
Nick?
Owned.
Never.
Owned. You're owned.
Felix?
Chris?
I'm owned.
Chris has seen it?
Hell yeah.
Felix?
The word cathedral comes from the Latin word Catholic and the word Benadryl. And so it's a medicine for the soul.
What?
I saw it when I was 8 years old. It's a very rough time.
So it's just you two losers.
Yeah, well.
Because you can never do it. And we've done it.
8 years old, if I had died when I was 16, 8 years old would have been the middle of my life. So think about that.
My friend told me.
If I had died earlier, one of the most pivotal moments of my life that I forgot about until you asked me would have been erased. So could you please fuck me?
My friend told me that she went there, but she didn't go in because they don't allow outside beverages. So I'm pretty sure I would have made the same calculation.
I was going to think, as a troll, like they've already raised like a massive amount of money to rebuild, you know, the
roof.
$1.5 billion.
Good Lord.
I think we should do a competing GoFundMe. But just as a troll, do it like and like get concept art made where it's just like we're gonna rebuild Notre Dame but update it with brutalist architecture.
Just a big concrete slab jutting out of the middle.
It's the most inflammatory thing you can think of. Like there'll be a Funko Christ. You work in mysterious ways.
Notre Dame Fire Day Twitter was just really abysmal. Cause like on the one hand, there was like the ultra like left woke take, which is just like it's actually good that this burned down and like you know you're crying for Notre Dame, but not you know a million other catastrophes or tragedies that are going on in the world, which is dumb. But then like even dumber was just like all the people just gnashing their teeth over this fucking building. It's like, dude. Sorry, it had a great run as the world's number one building, but I think it's time to give, I don't know, the Chrysler a shot at the number one spot. You know, come on.
Art Deco.
I think
it would have just like caved in. It sounds like the reading even like a little bit about it, like they did all this shoddy like reconstruction work on it at the turn of the 20th century, and it was like just part like huge segments of it were just like slipping off the foundation and stuff. And that's why they were doing the reconstruction.
Sick Transit Gloria all must end. And get over it. But it's just it was a big deal, and it's humbling in that moment to see such a you know an enduring symbol of civilization burn in front of you. Like that is it should be humbling for a minute.
I wasn't humbled.
But also
of course not.
Also you don't have to break your ass to show everyone else how upset you are about it or how little you care. Either way, you just have to get on fucking record with everybody. I am incredibly moved by this. That's how soulful I am. That's how much I care about culture. Or being like, I am so fucking woke and I'm so anti-imperialist that this is funny to me. I'm like the dang Joker over here.
It is funny that it burned down, like in a way.
Well, this
like,
is.
I haven't come up with the most infuriating possible position on this yet.
I'm sure you will.
I think it's somewhere along the lines of like, I don't know. It's a tough one to work on because I refuse to actually learn anything about France. So I don't think we're going to make a full go of this one. But just, you know, a very historic building burning down because let's assume someone just threw a cigarette somewhere. That's probably the reason, right? That's pretty funny. But it was a cool looking building. So that's sad. But no one died. And that's good. And okay, they should make it a Baha'i temple. Boom.
I just want to like bring up kind of a silver lining to all this too, which is Assassin's Creed Unity is out for you.
I did a search for Assassin's Creed Notre Dame, and the results were embiggening, to say the least.
Were they epic?
You know, a lot of people didn't physically get to see them, but they did get to see them in Ubisoft's adventure, Assassin's Creed Unity, where you get to clip through the altar itself.
Felix, people are crying about what happened to the cathedral in Assassin's Creed, but like Raccoon City is still in the state it's in. You know, can we get a fundraiser going? Maybe.
No, it was another one of those events that like I feel like if it happened like 10 years ago, this would have been like a 3-month long news cycle, and there would have been like a special time edition, a special issue of Time that you read in your dentist's office.
100 most influential buildings.
Not it would just be like the past and future of Notre Dame.
You
know, beauty from the ashes or whatever. But now, because it just we get so much information all the time, and every day there's a new thing that would have been a new big cycle like 10 years ago, and our receptors are just completely fucking fried. Everyone's just tripping all over themselves to just examine this one input and jam it down the same pipe. But just sort of filter it through their shitty brain, you know, be it like I went here with my parents when I was 14 and it made me the person I am today. And it's basically like you fucking killed me today, or, you know, fuck Notre Dame or whatever. And I don't really get mad at anyone for doing any of that because that's the, you know, the government, the nanny state is stepping in on, you know, things that hurt no one, like abusing opiates. And this is all we have left. But, you know, we're going to forget this happened in 2 weeks.
One group of people whose brains are definitely fried and for shit are like the I had to check in on Rod Dreher, of course.
He
burned through every synapse in his brain on this. And it's just like I said earlier, the way these people just love feeling this way. Ooh. Like they're so happy this happened because it gives them a chance to, like I said, like theatrically wallow in how miserable and besieged they feel. But
well, it's the same people who always say that Muslims have that talk about like Muslim martyrdom complex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, it's just the clearest projection ever. Being a Christian in America who thinks they're oppressed, like I thought it was bad during the Bush years. And it was maybe like a little bit more infuriating then because it felt more officially enshrined in state policy.
Yeah.
Not that it isn't now. I mean, it very much is now, but I guess it's less culturally overt now. But to do it now is just so fucking funny, if it wasn't so insufferable and infuriating.
The move that they're doing, of course, is like, you know, Glenn Beck just like already forestalling. Like, you could ask him, like, what would convince you that this wasn't arson?
Nothing could.
Like, he just literally gave people permission to believe what they're already going to believe about this. And Rod Dreher was like, I certainly hope we find out this wasn't arson.
Because
I can't imagine with the violence that France would suffer
He's just edging.
And
he's already
buying his plane ticket and getting fingers crossed. But
he was just slapping his erect cock. He wasn't even jacking off. He was just fucking open palm slapping it.
Yeah, we're going to get a really good answer on this one. You just picture the French fire inspector standing in the ashes, sucking on a cigarette, going, oh, life.
What if through a chain of events, like Rod Dreher goes over to France to like investigate it and figure out their bathroom situation, and he becomes like a Jerry Lewis figure? They like think it's a comedy act. Who's this 60-year-old man who's obsessed with bathrooms? This is the rebirth of Lewis.
He could become the new Mr. Hulot.
Yeah, he'd be like the bathroom shenanigans of it's Mr. Dreher.
Roger's bathroom playtime. Yeah. That's the new funniest French movie ever made.
La toilette crétin.
One of the best reactions to this vintage is that guy, that wet face creep, Matt Walsh,
yeah,
who is just like baying for blood and just going, I'd really like someone to explain to me how a fire could get that big that quickly. Yeah, right. And it's just like, I don't know, like well, an ancient wooden structure covered in construction equipment.
Anyone send him just like the Wikipedia article for fire? Yeah, really. Oh, never read about this before. Thanks,
fire
guys.
Spreading? I don't think so.
Did you guys see that video of John Kasich doing like a reaction video?
Oh, that was great.
I thought I was like waiting for him to be like, I've donated $20,000 to Notre Dame University, like in honor.
He is going to be doing guy in his car YouTube soon.
No, like Kasich was Kasich was just in a parking lot in Ohio, which I really liked as the contrast talking about this World Heritage site, and he just being like, I'll tell you what, you know, he's like, you can burn the building, but you can't burn the memories.
And he goes, oh my God.
No matter what, the Irish will stay fighting. They'll be fighting the fires wherever they are.
He's standing in this desolate parking lot. There's a security guard in the write-off frame.
It's like, hey, you know, remember that Western culture we're all mourning? Yeah, this is its gravestone right here. Right.
They said I couldn't sleep here, and I told them this was public land.
I mean, the two most likely outcomes, Kasich burned down Notre Dame while trying to charge his phone.
A Samsung Galaxy Note.
Yeah. Did you hear about the fire at Notre Dame? Or it was a symbolic act by forces sympathetic to Dan Quinn.
Oh, you're right. Lucifer Lou Holtz. That his bones are enshrined actually in Notre Dame.
I think it'll be funny when the billions of dollars for the Notre Dame GoFundMe are squandered and missing, and Macron posts a screenshot of his notes app saying, you know, I'm still in a toxic situation, and I just got out of rehab for my pastis addiction, so I don't really, this criticism is just harming my mental state.
And of course, it wouldn't have been a, you know, world-level news event if our own president didn't chime in on Twitter.
Our big, wet, dullard friend.
Hilarious suggestion that they use the forest fire airplanes to just dump several tons of water onto this.
No one, it's like a bunch of guys are just standing there watching a fire, totally helpless. Like, we need the big, wet, senile baby to tell us what to do.
I just love that.
Oh, my God, if only we knew what beat fire.
I love his confidence, though. I mean, it shows you why he is president. Like, yep. Is that he just, anything that happens, like, he feels like he can just, he's like, you know, I think the key to putting out the fire is to use more water than there is fire. And then, you know, like, people pointed out, like, they dropped those on forest because, like, to drop all that water is, like, really heavy and it would literally collapse the entire stone edifice of the building.
Yeah.
So that's good. Be on the lookout. Ben Shapiro, of course, as usual, is like smarter than like the Matt Walsh, Glenn Beck figures, in that he didn't outright start immediately making intimations that this was some kind of covered up arson job by the Mohammedans.
Oh, he's more subtle than that.
But he did hilariously claim that Notre Dame is a monument to Judeo-Christian culture. And as many people point out, during the construction of Notre Dame, the Jews were literally expelled from France, and they burned every like Jewish like text in a big bonfire in front of Notre Dame.
You know what? You have a few tips.
People make mistakes.
You have a few disagreements. You get together stronger, though, you know?
Once again,
that's what stronger together means.
Yeah.
These people literally know nothing about
history. They know nothing about anything.
At all. Yeah.
They know nothing about it. In the Middle Ages, if your kid got a whooping cough, you went and killed a Jew over it. I mean, that was just like how you dealt with any kind of problem in your life.
Well, I mean, you know, they got rid of whooping cough, though. So I don't like the cure, but like if that's what works.
Just walking around like Liam Neeson, just like, I gotta find one of these bastards.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Very good.
Well, you know, our condolences to the people of France. Sorry we can't make it there on our tour, but you know, you don't speak our language and aren't very funny anyway. Yeah. So all I gotta say, Cathedral of St. John the Divine, now number one cathedral in the world. Sorry, Notre Dame, you had a great run, but Cathedral of St. John the Divine, number one.
I think Rick Warren's church is now the number one cathedral in the West. Saddleback Ranch, that's the shield of the West, in my opinion.
So
Pizza Ranch, actually.
All right, so there is a certain New York Times article. There's actually two New York Times articles that came out this week about this presidential race and some of our favorite characters contained within this plot line that, when formed together, are just a magnificent tea party that I really have to share with our listeners and you guys. It's just, it tastes so damn good to sip.
This is a particularly delicious tea.
And
piping hot.
Courtesy of Elizabeth Williamson and Kenneth P. Vogel of the New York Times, we get an amazing profile of Neera Tanden of the Center for American Progress. The headline, "The Rematch, Bernie Sanders versus a Clinton Loyalist." And like this is New York Times. This is the paper of record. And it is now in the paper of record, basically all of the inane shit that we talk about and make fun of
yes,
on Twitter.
We have
all
been
day
vindicated,
long.
Sir. Yes. This is real news.
Twitter is real life.
It's
and don't believe
100%
anyone,
identical.
Don't believe anyone who tries to tell you otherwise.
Yeah, so this is a good counterpoint to all the people who are like, when you talk about Twitter bullshit, when you talk about real shit. Well, we have been talking about real shit. That's what this is. Harassing this old woman is real shit.
So I'm just going to dive into this article here. It says, the bad blood started early. In 2008, Neera Tanden, then a top aide on Hillary Clinton's first presidential campaign, accompanied Mrs. Clinton to what was expected to be an easy interview at the Center for American Progress, the influential group founded by top Clinton aides. But Faiz Shakir, the chief editor of the think tank's Think Progress website, asked Mrs. Clinton a question about the Iraq War, an issue dogging her candidacy because she had supported it. Ms. Tanden responded by circling back to Mr. Shakir after the interview, according to a person in the room, punching him in the chest. "I didn't slug him, I pushed him," a still angry Ms. Tanden corrected in a recent interview.
Hell yeah.
So
Neera.
Right off the bat in this profile of Neera Tanden, we have her admitting to assaulting a coworker for asking Hillary Clinton a pointed question about her support of the Iraq War.
She's basically Suge Knight.
But Felix, I know you would like this.
Holding Matt Duss over a balcony.
Oh, man. I don't know. This.
Well, I mean, I know you're in favor of physically abusing people who work in D.C. and any job in Washington, D.C.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. No. Okay. If Amy 2 is the last dragon, Neera is Shira's sea star. She, I don't see how you walk away with this from this article liking her less. Because, okay, the things to actually not like about her are, like, policy related. But I'll be honest, my image of her before this article was sort of like an icy, like, not icy, icy is not the right word, like robotic kind of, like the way that people in DC are robotic and seem to take no pleasure in anything and have no passion. Mm-hmm. But this is like, this is real shit, man. And he's real ass shit. She is the real ass dude, real ass dude of the week.
Well, it's what, Felix, is what you and me always admired about Peter Dow and Tom Watson.
Just their posters.
Well, yeah, not Tom. Tom's there for a paycheck. I think Peter is a man of passion.
Yeah.
Neera is too. I got some respect for it, man.
Well, she's fucking posting at 3:30 in the morning every day to people with 100 followers. She's powered by pure hatred and vengeance.
And Fies too. He's the campaign manager for Bernie too. So this is Cap. This is Neera Tanden literally punching the Bernie campaign.
As you said, Fies went on to be running Bernie Sanders' campaign, and then this week the Think Progress did that video sort of making fun of Bernie about being a millionaire because of his book, and then the Sanders campaign sent them an angry letter saying, I thought you were supposed to be, neutral in the campaign.
And then
whatever.
Fundraised off it.
Yeah, yeah. So continuing in the article, it says here, the blow up is another reflection of the ideological divisions among Democrats, this time between a legacy Clinton organization and a liberal wing trying to move the party to the left to harness the energy of millennials. Mr. Sanders' team remains convinced that the Democratic establishment worked behind the scenes to deprive him of the party's nomination in 2016. His campaign has cast the group as beholden to corporate interests set on thwarting him in 2020. Ms. Tanden rejected that characterization and asserted in an email to Mr. Shakir that the center shares the goals of unity. Jody Enda, the editor-in-chief of Think Progress, said that her website is editorially independent and that we don't have a favored candidate and we don't have a candidate who we disfavor. Still, Ms. Tanden's mother, Maya Tanden, says that her daughter can be very aggressive. She's not going to let anyone rule over her, she said, and she has loyalty to Hillary because Hillary is the one who made her. Those Bernie brothers are attacking her all the time, but she lets them have it too, my attendant said. He says Sanders got a pass in 2016, but he's not getting a pass this time. So this is Neera's own mother spilling the tea.
Apparently, okay. She's very mad about that.
And why did they call her mom?
Yeah,
though?
Why?
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
It's a very odd
like,
choice.
Like, why did they do that?
It's a very odd choice.
I can't.
That's an incredibly odd choice.
Yeah, this is Connie Chung all over again.
Yes.
I can't speak to why they did it, but I'm certainly glad that they did do it.
Oh, of course. I love
I don't know.
Too.
I don't know. I don't know if I am. It's just very odd. I don't know how old this woman is. It feels very strange to me. I don't know why the fuck they did that.
They were Romeo dialing, Felix. Come on.
I guess so.
Everybody's been like, if you go look at that tweet where she's like, this is really upsetting. Like, it's just like people on the left, like climbing over each other to be like, this is wrong. Like, I'm sorry this happened to you. Like, all the people, you know, on there. And it's just like, who cares? Like, it's fine.
Talk about things we're not really going to remember a few weeks from now. I'm just very puzzled by it. I have nothing to say, but that is incredibly puzzling to me.
Felix, is you taking this opportunity to send a coded message to his mother to never pick up the phone or talk about him to a journalist?
My mother would say, I mean, I have a Jewish mother, so she would only talk to the press to say I'm a perfect angel who has a clean room.
Liar.
Well, it's the thought that counts, isn't it?
Continuing here, it says the Center for American Progress and its sister political arm, with a $60 million combined annual budget and 320 staff members, have played an outsized role in the Democratic Party for nearly two decades. Founded in 2003 by top advisors to Bill and Hillary Clinton, the organization has sought to rebrand itself as a brain trust for the anti-Trump resistance. Its donor roles overlap substantially with those of the Clinton's campaign and foundation. The think tank has taken in millions from interests often criticized by liberals, including Wall Street financiers, big banks, Silicon Valley titans, foreign governments, defense contractors, and the healthcare industry. Individual donors can ask to remain anonymous. Ms. Tandon, whose salary was $397,000 in 2018, was an unpaid advisor to Mrs. Clinton's 2016 campaign while running the think tank and was considered a candidate for a top White House job had Mrs. Clinton won the presidency.
I say that just seems wrong. Is that's just okay because there's no more campaign finance laws that she can be an advisor to the Clinton campaign while running this organization with, you know, huge shadow donors?
Yeah, that seems like a convenient workaround. But back to Mrs. Tandon's, Maya Tandon, the mom, she says, that's what she does. She shows up at rich people's places because she needs funds from them. That place runs on Neera Tandon.
Wow. Damn right it does.
So she
runs on Xanax.
I think accurately describing her job is just, you know, like kissing ass of rich people to get their donations.
I mean, I
launder their shitty points of view in a liberal point, you know, way.
I mean, I sympathize with that. That's kind of our job too. You know, that's why we're doing this whole European tour. We've got to, you know, go to the Iron Bank and explain ourselves.
Yeah. Or else if we don't go over to Bravos, AKA Germany, the Iron Bank, AKA the ECB will back Pod Save America.
They do have an example though of, how this courting of donors does seem to influence the policy of CAP. It says here, in November 2015, after Ms. Tandon invited Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel to a question and answer session at the center, a dozen staff members stood during an all-staff meeting and read a statement of protest. In an email Ms. Tandon sent on the day of the Netanyahu visit, stolen and released by WikiLeaks, she told the think tank's founder, John D. Podesta, that the far left hates me for hosting Mr. Netanyahu, but the invitation may have sealed the deal with a new board member. Mrs. Tandon was wooing Mr. Levine, a pro-Israel philanthropist. The next month, Ms. Tandon wrote a jubilant email to Mr. Podesta telling him Mr. Levine was joining the board. So Netanyahu was worth it, she added with a smiley face emoji. Mr. Levine no longer sits on the center's board, but his foundation remains a big donor. Oh, speaking to her Twitter habits, it says, on one recent night, Ms. Tandon feuded on Twitter with liberals over whether Mrs. Clinton's condemned far-right hate mongers strongly enough more than 2 years ago. The online bickering raged for an hour, drawing trolls from both factions. When the woman originally targeted by Ms. Tandon's tweets delivered a wake-up call, Neera, you're responding to a graduate student on Twitter at 1:40 a.m. That was Hannah Gase, actually.
Yeah, shout out to Hannah.
But, you know, I mean, like, the article does give a pretty good look at, like, how CAP, and the, you know, operates as a, you know, fundraising arm that, you know, I think it can legitimately be said that, you know, they raise money from incredibly rich donors. Oh, God. And, like, in exchange, they craft and talk about policy in a way that doesn't offend them or speaks to their goal.
And they help create the agenda of the Democratic Party, because those dullards in Congress don't know anything about policy. They're all unemployable fail sons and small business fucking Philistines and like local TV anchors. They have no practical understanding of any policy. They need to outsource that shit, and CAP does it. And in one end of it goes money from fucking Gulf dictatorships and the defense industry and pharmaceuticals, and out of the other side comes things like Medicare for All Plus, the platinum limited edition.
One more thing here. It says, Ms. Tandon acknowledged tensions with what she called millennial agitators in her party, but blamed Mr. Trump, who made crazy radical ideas seem more normal, she said in the interview.
Oh, my
crazy,
God.
Crazy. Again, she's talking about Medicare for All.
Yeah, that's the same, and like, as, you know, this putting is, a dome over America.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no, this is what CAP exists to do, is stop something like Medicare for All from
Which
happening.
Which is why anyone who got mad at Bernie for criticizing CAP, you just fundamentally don't understand what the stakes are here and what the issues are and what the conflicts
the
are.
The odd thing about that, where they're like, why is Bernie picking a fight with this obscure think tank that, like, you know, most Americans, you know, couldn't care less about or know about? And I'm like, well, A, if that's the case, then what harm does it do?
Yeah, right.
And B, like, most people may not know it, but, like, this is, like, a real contest for, like, who's going to control the future of the Democratic
Absolutely.
Party. And they are on the other side.
Yes.
I mean,
Cap Delenda Est.
I think one of the common criticisms of Bernie I've seen recently is people saying, oh, he has no idea to do the things he wants to do. Well, if you're unaware why Trump has not been able to do a lot of the things he's campaigned on, besides a lack of will in doing it, it's because all the people he has to staff his administrations and departments with are people from existing think tanks.
Exactly.
And those think tanks have positions identical to Rubio or Jeb or someone like that. So he ends up governing like that out of laziness and out of default. And so to take on the existing think tank world, whether you agree with how it's done or not, it does show that he has some idea of how he wants to get some of these things done. You can't have both.
Yeah.
Well, before we move on, Felix, this is the New York Times calling your mother. This is Mikey Barbaro calling your mother. Mrs. Biederman, I'd like to ask you some questions about your son. Oh, yes, his sister's marrying a doctor.
Got him.
That was just a cute little slice of life.
Yeah, that's like a Gilda Radner character.
Yeah.
The second Times article that, you know, dovetails extremely nicely with the Neera article is another news article by Jonathan Martin, headline, Stop Sanders Democrats Are Agonizing Over His Momentum. Again, just delicious Earl Grey here. Earl Grey. Earl Grey, hot. The real money paragraph here is, from canapé-filled fundraisers on the coasts to the cloakrooms of Washington, mainstream Democrats are increasingly worried that their effort to defeat President Trump in 2020 could be complicated by Mr. Sanders in a political scenario all too reminiscent of how Mr. Trump himself seized the Republican nomination in 2016. Okay, I'll stop right there. Can anyone see the problem with that formulation, at least as far as Democrats go? They're worried that, you know, Bernie Sanders is going to be a repeat of Donald Trump. You know, the guy who won the presidency.
He fucking won.
Yeah. And these the guy people, who's also doing an amazing job now.
2016, they have just decided to pretend it didn't happen. These people are more fixated on the 1972 presidential election than the one that happened 3 years ago.
Well, it's a fascinating election.
It's just like every single argument they make is rebutted by the simple words, Hillary lost. Everything you want to do is what Hillary did, and it failed. Therefore, it can't work by definition. You fucking scumbags.
But what if it worked?
Yeah. Yeah, then you'd be saying the opposite.
Continuing, how, some Democrats are beginning to ask, do they thwart a 70-something candidate from outside the party structure who is immune to intimidation or incentive and wield support from an unwavering base without simply reinforcing his "the establishment is out to get me" message, the same grievance Mr. Trump used to great effect? But stopping Mr. Sanders, or at least preventing a contentious convention, could prove difficult for Democrats. He has enormous financial advantages, already substantially outraising his Democratic rivals, that can sustain a major campaign through the primaries. And he is well-positioned to benefit from a historically large field of candidates that would splinter the vote. If he wins a substantial number of primaries and caucuses, and comes in second in others thanks to his deeply loyal base of voters across many states, he would pick up a formidable number of delegates.
Oh, no.
Going on here, there is a growing realization that Sanders could end up winning this thing, or certainly that he stays in so long that he damages the actual winner, said David Brock, the liberal organizer, who said David he had Brock. Discussion with other operatives about an anti-Sanders campaign and believes it should commence sooner rather than later. So, you know, he's taking what he learned doing, rat-fucking Anita Hill during during the Clarence Thomas. Again, just to remind you about David Brock, he was a Republican hatchet man. He was like a Roger Stone figure right up until he claims he had a conversion moment when he saw Pat Buchanan speak at the 1992 Republican convention and just incite a pogrom against gay people.
Bullshit.
Which, you know, fair enough. You know, he feels personally attacked, but like that was his motivation to become a Democratic Party hatchet man. He's not a guy who
called Anita Hill a little bit nutty and a little bit slutty.
No, and it's also conversion took place far later than that because he was still going after Clinton in the first few years of his administration, correct?
Yeah. He was part of the whole Arkansas Project thing at the beginning, yeah.
So just last thing I want to read from this here, it says, the matter of what to do about Bernie and the larger imperative of party unity has, for example, hovered over a series of previously undisclosed Democratic dinners in New York and Washington, organized by the longtime party financier Bernard Schwartz. The gatherings have included scores from the moderate or center-left wing of the party, including Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the Minority Leader, former Governor Terry McAuliffe of Virginia, Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend, Indiana, himself a presidential candidate, and the president of the Center for American Progress, Neera Tanden.
There she is again.
So, again, like it's hilarious that like they really, and this is really fun to read because they are kind of checkmated in a way in terms of like, I mean, they're still going to attack him and try to defeat him with everything they've got, but they're checkmated in the sense that like they've already said, if all of the rich people who donate to us and all the leaders of the party can't literally meet together in private dinners to find out a way to stop him from gaining the nomination, how can we do that without making it seem like that's exactly what we're doing?
Right. How do we launder our hand in this?
Well,
we're obviously working against him, just like we did in 2016.
Well, that's not a checkmate. That's called a zugzwang.
If you're just some like lackey consultant and you just manage to like get into one of these dinners, like I'm sure there's a bunch of people who get in and get the dress up and get all excited about going. And you just sit in a room and you're surrounded by all those people and then they get up and they're like, all right, so how are we going to prevent Bernie from winning? It's like, how do you not just be like, oh, I'm in the evil room. Like, these are the bad
this
guys.
Is like this is like there's Kent Brockman and fucking Dr. Hibbert and Mr. Right. Burns. And
a vampire.
Texas Oil Man.
Vampire.
I mean, it's like that.
Who controls the British crown? Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do.
It really is. But I like that they couch their concern in, well, we're worried that he's going to either damage the eventual nominee and make them lose, or he's going to get nominated and then lose to Trump. They're acting like their real concern is he's going to lose. But that is 100% bullshit. Their real concern is that he would win.
Yes.
They would love it if he lost to Trump. That would be fantastic. Another 4 years where they don't have to do anything.
They don't have to govern, and they get to ram it down our throats.
Exactly. They're like, see? And you get to probably put paid to socialism for being a threat again for another 20 years. They would love it if he lost to Trump. No. If Bernie wins, they are fucked, or could be if he actually like is serious about it.
Here's the point I want to make about that, though, and Dave Weigel made this point, and I think he's exactly right. What they're really concerned about, but none of them are going to say, is that if Bernie gets the nomination, and it's, you know, like I said, like anything can happen, there's still a ton to go, but like he is in a very strong position. Like he has got the, you know, pole position to fucking right now with his money and the fact that he does so well in caucuses, and the fact that like there are so many other candidates to like take this to the convention and leave with the nomination. What they're too afraid to say, but what they're all thinking is that if that happens, then Howard Schultz is going to get in the race, split the vote, and ensure a Trump second term. However, Jacob Bacharach added a little to what Weigel said, and I think he actually has exactly right. What all these people who are or what the all these people are saying when they're saying we're worried about Bernie in the general. What they're really saying is I'm going to vote for and support Howard Schultz, ensuring Trump's second term, because like I'm going to do everything possible to keep Bernie from becoming president, because that then like we vastly prefer Trump being president to him
absolutely,
being president.
Absolutely, 100%. And that is why this article was both very encouraging to me in a way and also discouraging. It was encouraging because it really showed you, oh, he is a legitimate threat to this fucking party structure. Like the argument that he is somehow a sheepdog for the Democrats and he's just like herding all these potentially radical people away from like, you know, the fucking PSL or something. he is clearly seen as
an existential threat
to this fucking party, which means great. That's good. This party needs to die. But it also tells you that if he did get in there, he is going to be so fucking hamstrung by the fact that the people in his party are going to have no investment in his presidency. And in fact, are going to have an investment in seeing him fail, which is going to be matched by the one that the Republicans have. So that's going to be very dangerous if he gets the
victory. And not to mention also, and also to add to that, should he become president, he will immediately face a media that is more uniformly hostile to him than they are to Donald Trump every regard, up and down.
Yeah.
And, you know, that goes to show that these people need to not just be defeated in, you know, these primaries. They need to be evicted from the party. They need to be evicted from the coalition, all the canopy.
And that's why Cap has
to
go.
Because the thing is, Bernie exposes their impotence. Bernie doesn't need their money.
Yeah.
He doesn't need their know-how, which they don't have any fucking know-how. And he doesn't need their votes because they're all on the fucking coasts.
Yeah. Yeah. It, like their existence as, you know, hey, you need us because we're the ones that put things together to make it a party. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of people aimlessly opposed to conservatives and with no ability to exercise political power. But Bernie's model is, no, you don't have to do this. You don't have to create this funnel, this laundering mechanism from corporations and from special interests connected to, you know, then take their money to create a party. You can create an alternative source of revenue, which means an alternative source of legitimacy.
So I don't worry about them supporting Howard Schultz. I mean, they should do what those, you know, labor rebels in the UK did and start the fucking problem solvers party that gets 2% of the vote.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that the whole theory of power with Bernie is that, I mean, yeah, if it was a typical Democrat-Republican race, Bernie could end up losing to Howard Schultz, sort of spoiling it 2000 Nader style in reverse. That's possible, but the idea is that Bernie changes the electoral math because he appeals to people who otherwise wouldn't vote for a Democrat or otherwise wouldn't vote, which means that 2% who probably will vote for him in, you know, the suburb in Raytheon Acres, Northern Virginia, and, you know, Beauchus, Rhode Island and stuff, but that will not impact the national popular vote the National Electoral College because Bernie's going to run up margins in a lot of states that are more a blue collar, quote unquote.
Right. In other words, that he causes a realignment.
Right.
And the thing is, there is so much pressure on those who want to beat Trump that I think he has very little to worry about. I think a potential Howard Schultz candidacy would take more from Trump's column overall.
But here's the thing, though. Like all those people in those dinners, if Bernie gets the nomination, will either openly or tacitly support Howard Schultz.
Yes.
And all the people, the Stop Sanders people who are obsessed with party unity and claim that they all claim to hate Bernie personally because they feel that he was a spoiler for Hillary Clinton, that he damaged her beyond recognition.
Even though he refused to talk about the giant ethical problem that was the huge albatross around her neck the entire year.
They claim to not like him personally because, you know, of this or that, or he's rude, or mainly because he finger wagged or he acted as a spoiler. I mean, you shouldn't be fooled by that. They hate him because they hate his politics. They do not. They have a vested interest in Medicare for All or anything like that. They want to prevent that from happening ever. And generally, as far as the leadership of the Democratic Party goes, have a vested interest in just not governing. are responsible.
They do not
want to
be responsible. Yeah.
They do not want to be on the hook for running a country.
No. Oh, God. They were so horrified to get that supermajority in 2009. They were just desperate to get rid of that thing.
No, but like what's hilarious about this is like the thing that these people still, the reason why, like, if you still to this day search Susan Sarandon's name on Twitter, you will see some of the like most mind melting drivel imaginable, is because, you know, he was a spoiler, you know, and they're going to absolutely try to do that against him. They would have no problem supporting or voting for Howard Schultz. That's what they're telling you, is that if you work hard for Bernie, and, you know, he runs a good campaign and gets the nomination, guess what? I'm going to vote for Howard Schultz. That's what these people are telling you. They're not saying it openly, but if you read between the lines, it's not easy to figure out.
No, they're right there.
I mean, it is easier to figure out.
A Howard Schultz campaign would be, like, great fodder for comedy, though. Like, every time that dude steps in front of a camera, he says something that just is, like,
he is really dumb.
He's very stupid.
He's really stupid.
He did a master class on, like, being an entrepreneur, and it's him, like, trying, like, fumbling with an espresso machine, like, trying to show how to make coffee. It's so silly.
I gotta say, I think those defections would help Bernie, who would, you know, if he wins the nomination, would, you know, face an immediate problem of solidifying his support in a party with, you know, people like that, because everyone recognizes, okay, we have a pressing existential need to defeat Trump. That's the one thing that has to happen. If Bernie wins fair and square, and you don't like his policies, maybe you're a little waffling on him, well, you're really gonna fucking hate the people who are just straight up traitors to that cause.
Absolutely.
And I also like the idea that if you read a lot of these people long enough, you always see them come back to this idea that he was never vetted in 2016. And, you know, if he's a nominee, oh, man, what the Republicans are going to dig up about him. Did you know that he supported the Sandinistas in the 1980s? It's like, good. I'd like to have that debate where, like, the other side is like, yeah, we were pro-Contras in the 1980s.
You know those guys who sold crack and murdered children and nuns and shit? Yeah, we literally like those guys.
Just one last thing about Bernie this week, because it was the other big news from him in the campaign, was his the Fox News town hall that he did in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which, you know, leading up to it was, you know, controversial on the left, because, like, there are people who are like, you can't
legitimize Fox News.
You can't legitimize Fox News.
Single biggest fucking TV news channel in the country, highest rated and one. Can't legitimize
highest
it.
Youth reach too. Yeah.
Can't legitimize it.
Well, I was laughing about if when Trump got mad at that segment, that was the angle he went with. Bernie went on and gave a platform to white nationalists. Very, very, very gross.
Well,
white male leftists should reconsider their actions. You know, it's very gross to legitimize this place that, you know, says some very, very, very bad things. They're nasty.
Well, hilariously, like, the idea that, like, this would help Fox News. All of the Trump was very angry about that.
That really should tell you all you need to know.
He was mad.
He felt betrayed by his friends at Fox News.
He was pissed off at Brett Baer and the crowd, and literally said that, like, there were many people outside the panel that, like, outside, they had Trump signs. Yeah. They love Trump. However, Fox viewers are pissed off about it too, because they know how bad it makes them look.
Yeah.
That, like, and literally the most common comment I've been seeing, like, in responding to this, is people just saying, I've made the switch to OANN, like the Mike Huckabee fucking evangelical news network.
Oh,
they're like, the media's fake news, Fox is phony news, the Mike Huckabee show is the only thing we can watch to get the real truth.
Hell yeah.
So, I mean, this is even, like, I'm sure it's like, it won't have any real effect on Fox News' bottom line, but it did, you know, it has opened up a pretty funny fracture in their own audience. And the second point I want to make is, like, I watched that Bernie Sanders thing on Town Hall. He fucking crushed it. Like, some of the, like his closing statement, I thought, like, literally, I was like, he could be president if this is the message he goes with in the general.
Watching, just a couple of points. I think sometimes the divisions in this country get a little bit too hot. Okay, at the end of the day, we are all Americans who love this country. And I also think, and the media plays not a good role in this, and again, not just Fox, is we have a lot more in common than most people think we do. All right, poll after poll. Should we raise the minimum wage to a living wage? Yes. Should we rebuild our crumbling infrastructure?
Yes.
Should we make sure that our veterans get the health care that they have earned?
Yes.
All right. Should we make sure that we do not cut Social Security, or Medicare or Medicaid? Should we give huge tax breaks to billionaires? No! You know, that's how most people feel. So I hope, look, I'm looking forward to a good campaign. And the last point that I want to make, and I thank Fox, you know, for the opportunity of being here. And that is, I want to see our country have the highest voter turnout in the industrialized world, not one of the lowest. So no matter what your views are, get involved in the political process, stand up and fight to make this a better country. Thank you all very much.
I don't know, maybe I'm being too optimistic or something, but I thought...
No, it seemed like even the organs that are hostile to Bernie had to give it up. Like Politico had a whole piece about how, yeah, he fucking killed it.
What's funny now is all of the other struggling Democratic candidates saw that and are now like, well, yeah, I'm going to do a Fox News town hall. Yeah, and they're all going to get owned. Oh, so bad.
Oh, my God. I'm humiliating.
Talking to Fox News audience, like, yeah, you're going to ace that.
I do want to see Eric Swalwell bust out his team of rivals idea of
Eric Swalwell.
Okay, so he is a congressman from Massachusetts, and his
he's from California.
He's California,
and he is running. He's doing one of those things where he's just going to have one issue. Like Jay Inslee is the climate change guy. He is the gun control guy. He's running. He's got like Parkland teens following him around like a school of fish. And this is kind of smart because it's a very highly emotive issue. It's a super partisan issue that is very weighted towards, like, Democrats rank it highly. They have a lot of emotion around it. It doesn't offend any of the big donor groups. Like, health insurers and the fossil fuel industry don't give a shit about fucking gun control.
And Bernie's waffled on it.
And they pointed about, he doesn't have an F from the NRA, you know? So it's kind of a decent wedge issue. But he also has now said that he wants to appoint Republicans, plural, to his cabinet to show the way we can cross over party lines. And I just think, if you hear that and you think that's what we need, you will have a pudding brain. You're a baby. You're a moron baby.
Yeah, he said.
You're not just a baby. You're a stupid baby. You're a baby the other babies make fun of for being a moron.
Yeah, if you're a baby and you're listening to this, you're valid.
I see you.
Swalwell said, I want to make a team of rivals, which Obama also said after he was elected. And I never understood why that was persuasive.
Doris Kearns Goodwin.
I know what the reference is. It's just, I like the idea of a team of rivals if it's like young, sexy hotshots, you know?
And they're going to do a bank job.
Yes.
And they're brave. Yes.
One last job.
Yeah.
And of course, that always misunderstood the idea of the book because, at least Obama, you could argue his team of rivals thing was based more on the book, which was popular right around when he got elected, because it was about personal rivalries. William Seward was the guy that Lincoln just beat for the Republican nomination, and so they had that enmity. But it was not ideological rivalry. They were all on the same side. They were all fucking Republicans, or they were former Democrats who'd moved to the Republican Party. They were all pro-union. I mean, they were all on board with the fucking program.
The modern idea of team of rivals would be like if Abraham Lincoln put Jefferson Davis in his cabinet.
Exactly. Exactly. What the fuck are you doing? Like Clement Van Lanningham is fucking... It was like when they made Johnson his VP, and how the fuck did that turn out?
So that's the pitch that will work on me if it's like an Ally McBeal thing. It's, you know, rivals in the boardroom, friends in the bedroom.
Oh my God, dude. Could you imagine if like Ray LaHood fucked Kathleen Sybilis? Sexual tension there. So fucking hot, dude. I love it. Thank you. The Fox Town Hall, I'm most excited to see. I think the Buttigieg one is going to be more boring than you think because Buttigieg, he's a lot of the way that conservatives talk about him now reminds me of how conservatives talked about Obama in like 2005, 2006, where they're like sort of neutral to positive on him now. Like, I thought it was very notable how Ben Shapiro talked about him. If you remember, Obama got a lot of like positive play after like the Perp America speech. but it's going to be a lot more boring than you think because Buttigieg is a robot. He's a killer. You know, he knows exactly how to say whatever dull shit for whatever fucking stupid audience he's been in front of because he's been like, Buttigieg is like, he's like, you know, Floyd Mayweather grew up in a storied boxing family, and he was taught from like a young age how to jab, and he always held up his shoulder the right way. From every waking moment was spent preparing for prize fights. And that's how Buttigieg is with job interviews.
He would just wear like little sailor suits.
Yeah, oh my God. He had a little fucking busy, you know, busy box that had like a fake LinkedIn screen on it. But
he had a speed bag, but for the question, what's your greatest weakness?
I volunteer too much. I am most excited for Inslee's town hall. That's good. The guy who talked about accidentally seeing porn with his mom during his kickoff.
Oh, that was Hickenlooper. That's the other nondescript Western governor.
Why are there two of them? Just do the fusion dance. No one knows which one is which.
You should do the fusion dance.
You want to be practical? Just do it. No one knows which one is which.
But they're very different because Jay Inslee is the climate change guy. He's all about climate change, and Hickenlooper literally drank fracking fluid to prove to people that it was safe.
Oh, yeah.
He has fracked the entire state of Colorado. It's going to collapse into a giant sinkhole.
It's going to open the hollow earth.
Yeah. Right. Denver Airport, of course, will be the next.
For journalistic purposes, we're going to say they both saw Deep Throat with their moms. This is mandated by the FEC. FEC is a fairness doctrine. Every candidate saw a bang bust with their mom.
I mean, I guess like the last thing I'll say about like the Fox News shit is that, like, you know, Fox News obviously is, you know, a reprehensible institution that has done incalculable damage to our, you know, culture and politics. But if you're going to make that argument that like you can't engage them in any, then you better fucking make that argument for NBC, CNN, and, you know, all the major networks and other cable news networks. Because they're, I mean, like, basically what you're saying is that, like it's only because Fox is, like, the openly racist one that, like, makes it, like, the no-go zone or whatever. But, like for instance, all the networks or the New York Times, for instance, did in the run-up to the Iraq War. Like, yeah, we're pretty much okay with that. Or, like, that bridge is still okay to cross.
I mean, I think you could say, arguing, like, long-terms in terms of the role that Fox News had in softening the brains of the boomers of this country, that they're more responsible in a general sense for Trump's presidency. But if you want to say which news network in 2016 was more directly responsible for Trump, it was fucking CNN. Jeff Zucker admitted it. They're like, this is great. We love the Trump campaign. It's huge ratings. It's electric. They covered him all the time. Everything. He had more free fucking advertising than anybody else could buy combined. All of those other 16 people. And that's because CNN decided that it wasn't worth not focusing on every insane jabbering thing he said. And that just took the air out of the entire fucking campaign because it was all going into Trump's giant mouth.
And like,
so you can't just say this is Fox News. All these fucking institutions sucked absolute dick.
Yeah, like the if you're going to make like a structural analysis, you would have to conclude that all of the capitalist press is your enemy and a detriment to our society.
You want to talk about melting brains? How about fucking Facebook? Nightly viewership of Fox News is less than 1% of the population.
Yeah.
But like, and the other thing is like, I would say that like, look, if it's a question of like, should you be interviewed by Fox News if you're a leftist or interviewed by Tucker Carlson, for instance, then I would say like, no, there's no point in doing that because he's just going to shoehorn into whatever ridiculous narrative he's doing.
He has leftists on there so that they can criticize liberals, but only in ways that align with his critique.
But like, as far as like Fox News as an institution goes, if you're running for president of the United States, it is the biggest cable news network. And the idea that by boycotting it, as you said, Matt, like DSA people are going to stop buying catheters and like
and
fucking
gold coins
and like rascal scooters from like the people who fucking fund Fox News.
Yeah. Putting all my Iraqi dinars in a bonfire.
Yeah. Like, it's just it's silly. And how well Bernie did in that forum speaking to that audience. Like I said, like to on a major the biggest American cable news network to respond to a question about Medicare for all in two unbroken minutes, which you never, ever get to do any cable news. Like it's based in concision. You have to say things in like 17 seconds or less. But to have 2 minutes to explain something like Medicare for all to a national audience, I think was incredibly useful and good.
And you want to talk about, you know, what's more embarrassing? But you've seen these fucking CNN town halls
where
every single fucking person asking a question is a fucking intern on Capitol Hill.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, but I guess, like, as long as we're talking about the malign influence of the media in our country.
Yeah, man.
We're sitting here
Can't
with,
someone build a media that works?
Somebody has. No, we're sitting here with Nick Hayes, who is... done just that with Means TV. You may have seen some of these videos on Twitter with friends of the show Street Fight, Josh Androsky, Sarah June.
You know, you probably hear people constantly talking about this horrible thing called capitalism.
I have.
Yeah, you've heard that?
Yes.
You're like, what? How does capitalism affect me? I will tell you, it runs your entire fucking life. When you wake up in the morning and you feel like shit and you have to wipe the sleep from your eyes and like look around and be like, why does this have to happen this early in the morning? That's a capitalism.
And it controls everything, like your healthcare, your education. It all comes down to making money, but some things just don't make money.
Nick, could you just like tell us a little bit about, like, first of all, for anyone who doesn't know, what is Means TV and like what you guys are trying to do with this new platform?
Yeah, so Means TV is a project Naomi, who's my partner, and I started like a year and a half ago, around the time like we were starting to get involved in like electoral politics stuff. So like before we did the video for AOC, we were kind of like, we need like a media platform that doesn't suck
shit.
Wait,
just pause. Just so like, again, in case you're not aware, Nick, you did the major AOC campaign video that everyone saw. Like,
yes.
That was you guys.
Yep. Yeah.
You guys are
that
video,
was very effective. That
video
was,
wizards.
That was huge in building her national profile before the primary.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we reached out to her when she had like 8,000 followers. So that was really big. And then we did like Kaniella Ng's video, which was just trying to like bury like all the like slander basically like Hawaiian media had been pushing about him.
And you did that AOC video basically at cost. You basically lost money.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely we did. Yeah, we just did that because she ruled and because there was no like the only people we saw doing video on the left for like even like leftist socialist people like also did shit for like Wells Fargo and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like that doesn't square. So yeah, we did, we started doing like electoral stuff and we were like, wow, this is like, we're making a lot of impact here. Like, this is really cool. But we also want to do some stuff sort of outside of like the electoral politics space because like politics is boring and annoying and you get burnt out on it really quickly. So, we basically started trying to leverage like our political contacts, people we worked with and shoot some different stuff like with Kaniella Ng, with Street Fight, with all those guys.
Like the model is a kind of like a cooperative of people who produce and, you know, edit and share like these videos. And then it's based on like you guys are getting from like subscriptions and.
Yeah. So the whole thing is like we're a worker co-op, which we are advocating as like the model for digital media now. Like we're seeing digital media jobs like only becoming like harder to maintain. Like nobody can keep a digital media job for more than a fucking year.
Yeah, and cannibalized by venture entrepreneurs and capitalist firms as they pick the bones off of once proud organizations or not so proud.
Cool, edgy. Yeah.
Exactly.
So yeah, the whole thing is like we're worker owned. So everybody that's like anybody that's a full time employee at the company within a certain period of time gains access to a percentage of the profit and equal voting power as anybody else in the company.
So we saw over the last couple of weeks the Street Fight video explaining in their own way what capitalism is, but like as this goes forward, like what's on the horizon, like what kind of stuff are you guys going to come out with?
Yeah, so we're doing this campaign is basically like a proof of concept because when we say anti-capitalist entertainment to people don't know what that is, and so this is trying to show people like this is what we could have if we were to sort of fund and invest in like a structure like this. But the end goal of Means TV, like what we're working to raise money for, is a platform like Netflix, sort of a digital streaming service that you can go to, that you can pull up on your Apple TV, that you can pull up on your phone or whatever, and you can watch like movies, TV shows, reality shows about workplaces being unionized, like animated shows about like people like Elon Musk being shitheads. Like it's a place for leftists, and it's also just a place anybody can go and like watch some shit that isn't like aggressively individualistic or militaristic or
like if you are, you know, have creative pursuits, or like you like doing animation or videos or things like that, this could be a place that you could potentially pitch to, and a platform where people could see your work if you wanted to create it.
Yeah,
or maybe even get money for it.
Yeah, we do. We take pitches and we like work with people to develop those and develop budgets for those projects. Like, you know, not only are we trying to like provide people with anti-capitalist entertainment, but we want to create a place where like if you're like a person like me who's just staring down the digital media landscape, right? And like it's like, okay, I can go cut ads for the Saudi Empire for Vice.
Or my wrists.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. It's like it's such a bleak landscape. There just has to be another option for like young people, like people within sort of anti-capitalist politics to go and add something creatively.
This very ambitious, producing all of these programs, producing a full slate of programming for a streaming service, that's obviously very expensive, even if you're doing a lot of stuff in-house. How do you make this into a self-sustaining enterprise?
So a big part of that is, I think, being clear with people what we are and what we're trying to do, which is we are explicitly political. We are anti-capitalist. We are socialist. We work with communists, with anarchists. We are a multi-tendency, big platform or big tent platform, right? And I think that's why like we were just talking about Fox News. It's like Fox News tells you what the fuck they are, you know? And like, mm-hmm. you know, where CNN is like, we're unbiased. And it's like, you're not though. And I think just being honest with people and being like, this is our perspective, this is where we come from, goes a long way. But the actual funding of projects and stuff like that will be subscription-based. Basically, like we're going to be always putting out free videos and kind of infotainment stuff just to like bring new people into the fold of like leftism. But we'll also be creating like a paywall system, basically.
And why make a streaming service from scratch instead of, say, a YouTube channel or a Twitch stream?
I mean, YouTube can just take your shit down. Is the like YouTube, if they don't like mm-hmm. your stuff, they can just take it down. And I think there's a lot of power to be built on YouTube, but it's a corporate platform. I mean, I'm getting recommended Jordan Peterson videos after I watch a street fight. What is Cap?
Yeah, personally, you know, so. From me.
So
this guy's
like,
really smart.
Yeah, right. Damn. So it's like that platform is, they know that their viewership is coming from these kind of alt-right channels, and that's what they're pushing in algorithms. And it's like you see people like ContraPoints who are doing a great job of beating that back. But I think YouTube is so personality focused, and so like I'm talking to camera for 30 minutes about just like some, you know, whatever, that sort of expanding that imagination a little bit and being like, what if we also had TV shows and movies and like web series and animated shows and all these different sorts of things that we've never had.
And like also similar to what we talked about with ContraPoints, like the vast majority of the content on YouTube is just unwatchable dreck with zero production value, thought or care put into it at all. It's just like,
yeah, it's not very inspiring.
Some angry asshole talking to his laptop, you know,
right.
Whereas like, you know, doing something with a little bit more artistic merit or value to it, or just, you know, production.
Yeah. I mean, that's in the left has been, you know, and maybe rightfully so a little bit, but kind of cast as this like lazy, like kind of incompetent, like we got
check.
Yeah, right. Check. But it's like we're not, like we have people, you know, leftists are everywhere. Like leftists are the most creative people in our society, like making the best art. And it's kind of always been that way. But we've always had to work through these hyper-capitalist structures and platforms where, you know, our ideas are stifled, or they go through a corporate filter, and they're suddenly anti-worker when maybe we set out to make something different. And that's, I think, what, like me as a young person, like looking at, like, how do I plug in and try to like make an impact in media? It's like, oh, I just don't. I just eat shit for like my whole adult life. And then I'd like retire, I guess, maybe, but probably not. So it's yeah, like a platform for us to be able to build power in visual media in like a highly produced way, in a way that feels like familiar to just like your average person.
And you know, to the example of like, you know, how this is all very ambitious, but like, you know, how do you make it self-sustaining? You know, like the model of like small donors or monthly subscriptions, I mean, shit, like this show is a fucking like prime example of how that can fucking work, because like the show wouldn't be successful if we had done it through like a medium where like we weren't in control of like, you know, like our own content and how it was done. Yeah.
I also just wanted to pop in and say, because Nick and I were discussing this right before we came here, about how in terms of sustaining and building something, when you look at even, like, I don't know, any other form of corporate online media, we were talking specifically about Vice. Like, we just heard today that Vice Live went under, and all this
in power.
Yeah. All, and obviously we're all extremely sad about that. We're crying right now. It was my favorite nightly program. But, like, you know, all those companies are built rather by design or in the end to just, like, cut the base production as low to the bone as possible and funnel all the money up to this top, like, six people with the sometimes the explicit goal of eventually harvesting it and selling it.
Shane Smith.
To, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, we were just talking before we, like, started, like, could you just describe, like how Means TV, let's say how your approach differs from the, I don't know, the Vice model, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the biggest difference is that we're not a pyramid scheme. We're not, like, selling, we're not going to investors, we're not going to investors, but we're also not going to investors and being like, we're going to bring millennials back to cable television, like, knowing damn well that will never happen, you know?
Means TV promise number one, we are not a pyramid scheme.
Yeah, exactly.
Means TV promise number two, our co-founder is not a neo-Nazi.
Yeah, really.
But yeah, if you're just like, if you're operating like a co-op from a very basic level, you don't have to worry about whether or not it's all going to just be taken apart by investors, you know, 2 years down the line once it's proven successful, because right. That's not the model of the company. And I think that that is like a single fundamental, having worked in online web media for a long time, that is like the single greatest difference that you could ask for. You know that as a creator, your content is like there to be supported, and it is the lifeblood of the platform.
So I guess just to close out, Nick, I want to thank you so much for joining us and all the great work you've done with Means TV. But, you know, for our listeners, if they want to check out Means TV or like, subscribe, review, as they say, what do they do?
Yeah, so we're actually doing a fundraiser right now. You can go to means.media. We've raised over $50,000 already, and we're trying to raise close to $500,000 to fund our first year of TV shows, movies, reality shows, animations, all that stuff. So means.media is where you can find that stuff. And then you can also check us out on YouTube. We have the channel with the original Neon Cat video, thanks to Sarah June, which has been a huge huge boon to the YouTube channel and to the meme, the online left meme culture.
One of the all-time great memes.
Mm-hmm. So I would check us out there. And we're at means_TV on Twitter. And thanks, guys, for having me on to talk about it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Our pleasure, Nick.
Before we go, Virgil, give us those beautiful plugs.
Let's plug it up.
Oh, boy. We have a bevy of plugs today. First off, as you might have heard, we're going to Europe.
Everybody,
the American
Cheerio!
The American Expeditionary Farce.
Nine!
Will be in
Holiday
Berlin,
bro.
Germany on June 1st. Glasgow, Scotland, June 3rd, London, June 5th, Manchester, June 7th, closing things out, Dublin, Ireland, June 9th. Tickets go on sale this
Friday.
You can find them when they go live at chapotraphouse.com/tour. Also, you know, while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter. Just go on chapotraphouse.com, just like a little link at the bottom right there.
And if you're in Europe, you have no excuse for not coming to one of these shows. All that place has fucking trains, and who doesn't love traveling up by rail, the gentleman's
all right.
carriage.
I'm not fuck if you're in Europe, if you're in the Middle East, if you're in East Asia, guess what, it's called Eurasia, it's the same continent. Take a train, walk, drive, fuck you, come.
Plug number two, Mayday, we are doing a live show at the Housing Works Cafe, and we do have a
not
correction.
Not in Brooklyn, the one in Manhattan.
It is at 126 Crosby Street in the Lower East Side. You can get tickets at the link embedded in the description of this episode, or go to chapomaydaytrivia.splashthat.com. I believe some tickets are still available. This is a benefit for Housing Works, and we'll be doing pub trivia.
Yeah, all of us will write a 10-question category of our own.
How long do I have to do that?
Yes
you do.
And no, I said, how long do I have, dumbass?
Until Mayday. I'm the dumbass. It's literally called the Mayday Show, you fucking idiot.
Also,
I'll come up with, oh, I don't celebrate that holiday. Could be any day in May.
Felix,
31 days in May. Could be any of them.
Felix, the questions can't all be about Fortnite or Game of Thrones.
No, they can. This is Felix.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants.
Nobody's going to be able to answer any of these questions. Maybe one person.
Well, you think I give a fuck if they're stupid or not? That's not my problem. That's taken up with their parents. Their IQs are that bad. It's really nothing I can do about it.
Plug number three, we are doing a live show in Ithaca, New York on the evening of April 26th. That's this week. It will be at Cornell University, 301 Tower Road, room 105. It is sold out on Eventbrite, but I kind of think they were free there, so any wag could have just reserved a ticket, even if they're in Tacoma.
Yeah, with some dastardly Proud Boys.
As I understand it's...
I did that as a late April Fool's joke, my bad.
It's capped at 140 people, first come, first seated. Maybe there's a standby if you want to come check it out. And if you can't get in, well, there's a nice slope you can hang out on. And this is for closing out Union Days 2019. That is a that's a thing that they do at Cornell. It's about unions.
About unions and how they're good.
Final plug of the evening. This one's fun. Our friends at Decrim NY, which is an organizational coalition through policy advocacy, community organizing, public education, working to improve the lives of people who perform sexual labor by choice, circumstance, or coercion. It is a union of sex workers and allies with three goals: decriminalization, decarcerization, and destigmatization of the sex trades in New York. They are I know these organizers, and they have been doing phenomenal work in terms of applying a great deal of public pressure towards what seemed unthinkable about a year ago, which is decriminalization of sex work in New York, and they're hoping to become a national organization. They are doing a fundraiser to keep the lights on, because this organization advocacy is very expensive work, and you, the listener, can get something very special if you donate for $50.
Okay, so Virgil did a shit job of explaining what this is and asked me to record a pickup explaining what the gift is. We are going to record a podcast episode with Will, Matt, Felix, and Virgil. And then I'm going to have my friends at a cassette tape label press this podcast episode into 100 unique cassette tapes. After that, I will destroy the digital file of this podcast. It will only exist as cassette tapes. And if you donate to this charity fundraiser, we will send you one of these 100 absolutely limited, completely unlistenable unless you have the physical object, cassette tapes. And they will be packaged with nice, cool, trippy art. And yeah, back to Virgil.
It will never be released digitally. It is going into the KTEL vault. If you want to hear it, you must donate $50. So please, it's a very good cause. Please go to the link embedded below. And even if you can't donate $50, you know, donate whatever you can.
Those are the plugs. Thanks again to Nick from Means TV. Very cool project. We hope you guys will all check out. And till next time, boys.
See ya. Love ya.
See ya.